One of the things that makes me appreciative to be a part of the congregation here is the amount of emphasis that's placed on mission work. There seldom is a prayer led from this stand but that our missionaries are mentioned, and I hope that we continue to remember them on a regular basis. Some of you are aware, but some may not be, that the Oldhams and Flats are planning to go to Argentina and Brazil. The plans are now, though not confirmed, for us to leave on December the 26th, the day after Christmas. And I know that there will be several of you who will be interested in sending something to those missionary families. We realize that it will not be possible to take gifts from all of you in the sense of items, but we are suggesting that we do something that we think can be very helpful and encouraging to them. We have had made on the computer three cards. This is one of them. When this is unfolded, it will cover the length probably of two tables. We have one to the Goldmans in New York, one to the Hintons in Argentina, and one to the Gates in Brazil. We hope to have those unfolded and ready by next Sunday, so that each one who can, each one in the congregation and in the assembly who can go by and sign their name on those three cards. And it'll be much easier to fold those up and put in a suitcase to take with us than to take a number of cards or a card from each family. And then in addition to that, we are suggesting that those who would like to send a Christmas present to the missionaries do that in the form of money. And we'll take that money and put it into a cashier's check or in some way to take it with us and deliver it to them to use there. We'll have more to say about that next week, but I just wanted to tell you of the general plans that we have so that you can be thinking about that. We want to give everybody an opportunity to sign these cards to take to with us and to send the one to the Goldmans, and everyone an opportunity to send a financial gift, if you would like to these missionary families to help them around Christmas time and at the beginning of a new year. We are well blessed to have families in the mission field that are as dedicated as we have. I think sometimes we do not stop to appreciate the sacrifices that some of these are making. The work in Staten Island in New York City is a difficult work. Bill and Jennifer are working there under sometimes adverse circumstances, and I'm sure that the work, as we'll see firsthand in these other countries, are works that have their difficulties and require much sacrifice on the part of our missionaries. And we need to appreciate having families like we have with whom we can be involved in works like this. And there's one thing that I know that each one of us can do, and I'm persuaded that most of us are already doing this. Let's be sure to remember all of them in our prayers every day, that God will bless them as individuals and bless their work and their efforts in the Lord's kingdom. It's important for people to be able to send as well as to go. And there is a sense in which you and I are present with these families as they are in these places, because we're here seeing that the work goes on here so that we can support them and help them and encourage them and let them know that we're behind them. And the part that we play here is important to them as well as the part that they're playing there. And let's continue to pray for them every day. There is both a possible danger and a great benefit involved when a preacher asks a congregation to make suggestions about subjects that might be used in preaching. Back a few weeks ago, I suggested to you that I would appreciate suggestions and comments about lessons that might be used, and I have received several. There's a danger sometime in that some of those lessons may be some that preacher's going to have to dig a little bit harder than he ever has, or there might be something that's controversial or more difficult to handle. But I believe that the benefits are certainly great in a personal way, sometimes in causing me to study in an area that I've not studied that much before, and then be able to share with you some thoughts maybe that we have not presented before. The day that I asked for suggestions, one of our young men, Chad Ferris, handed me a little piece of paper and said, "I'd like for you to preach a lesson on Solomon's Prayer." I've been preaching several years, and I've never preached a lesson on Solomon's Prayer before. I don't know why Chad had that interest or has that interest in Solomon's Prayer or why he requested that, but I'm glad he did. Because I began to think back about Solomon and how we had let his name become synonymous with wisdom. I remembered that in almost every class that I'd had for little boys and girls up on the front seat before a gospel meeting and asking them questions in a Bible drill, that question was included, who was the wisest man that ever lived? And almost immediately everybody would say Solomon. Then I remembered that comments had been made down through the years of how could a man that is so wise have as many problems as he had? How could anybody that's wise have 700 wives and 300 concubines? One little fellow said that he was a farmer. He said he had 700 wives and 300 combines. But how could anybody be wise and face all the difficulties that Solomon faced and make some of the decisions that he made? And so I began to look at all of that in light of the request that was made about Solomon's prayer. Solomon's prayer that's being referred to here is mentioned particularly in 1 Kings 3. And then a reference is made back to it as God evidently continued to answer that prayer in 1 Kings 9. I want us to look at this prayer this morning and notice some very interesting things about it and draw some conclusions that I think not only will help us understand Solomon a little bit better, but maybe help us to understand our own relationship to God a bit better. Solomon became king, as you're aware, to follow his father David. David had been an outstanding king. Although having made some mistakes, he had lived in such a way that he would later be referred to as a man after God's own heart. David saw to it that Solomon was anointed and that he would be the one that would follow him. And after Solomon had become king, the Bible says in verse 5 of 1 Kings 3, "In Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, Ask what I shall give thee." And that's quite a statement. Here is God appearing to Solomon, and he says, "Solomon, I want to give you something, and I want you to ask. Ask what I shall give thee." How would you respond to a question like that, even if it were asked by man, or the offer were made by a human being? But here is the God of heaven who appears to Solomon and says, "Solomon, you ask what you want me to give you." Solomon made reference to his father David and the judgment of the people, and then made reference in verses 7 and 8 to the great responsibility that he now had as king of Israel. And then in verse 9, he made his request of God, and here is what I believe to be the central part of Solomon's prayer. Solomon said, "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge the people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" Perhaps we misunderstand a bit the wisdom of Solomon. We have allowed ourselves to think that God gave Solomon wisdom in every area of life, that he gave him the total ability to be wise in everything that he did. I do not believe the Bible indicates that, but rather that God answered this prayer relative to a specific request. And you know, we need to be concerned about specific requests. Elijah prayed that it might not rain, and then later he prayed that it might rain. It's possible sometimes that we ourselves allow ourselves to become involved in generalities and generic approaches to God, to where we just say, "God, bless me as is thy will," and certainly we want to submit to his will. Solomon might have said, when God said, "Ask what you want and I'll give it thee," "Well, God, you just give me everything that you think I need." But that's not the approach that he took. He said, "There's one specific area where I need some help. I need some help in dealing with the leadership of this great people that's called Israel. And so, God, I want you to bless me in that particular sense." And there are three points that need to be understood in this particular part of the prayer here. Notice, first of all, that Solomon thought in terms of people, not in terms of things. He did not say, "God, I want you to give me a great kingdom and bless this kingdom." He perhaps knew at that time that he had been designated to build the house of God, the temple of God, but he did not mention that temple in this prayer. He did not say anything about physical matters as such, or at least did not approach it from that standpoint. He said, God, my big responsibility is with people. And I'm going to have to deal with people. So I want you to bless me as far as my relationship with people is concerned. And then he said, in the second place, I need to be able to discern between good and evil. If I'm going to deal with people and lead people and help people to go in the right direction, then as a leader, I must be able to know the difference between what is good and what is evil. And so God give me the ability to discern between good and evil in the judgment of the people. It's significant, I think, that he asked for this. He did not ask that he might be able to depend upon his own thoughts or his own wisdom to judge the people, but he said, God, I need this ability to know right from wrong and to approach judgment from that standpoint. It is so easy for us to form our judgments dealing with people based upon our own feelings and our own experiences, or perhaps a combination of both. And Solomon might very well have done that. He was a man who had had a great deal of experience even at this time. Evidently a man who was above average in intelligence and ability. And he might have approached it from the standpoint that I'll use my experience and I'll use my feelings and my ability in making these judgments, in determining what's right and wrong. But he did not. He said, God, I need to know what's right. Give me the ability to determine what is right in dealing with people. Now, I don't know that there's ever been a prayer prayed that's more important than that as we apply the principle to ourselves. If we could learn to ask God to help us to know what's right, not necessarily what we want or what we think is best or what we would like to have, in dealing with our family relationships, our business experiences, our community involvement, if we could always have in the back of our minds that the bottom line of all of this is, what's right? Help me to discern between good and evil. At the time that Isaiah wrote in Isaiah 5:20, a few years after this prayer of Solomon, Isaiah said that the people had come to the point that they called good evil, and they put darkness for light and light for darkness and bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And that's along about the time that they really began to have problems in the divided kingdom that resulted in God's people going into captivity and losing many of the blessings that they had, many of them at least for a time, because they were not looking at what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's evil, what's light and what's darkness, what's sweet and what's bitter. They were switching those things around. And so Solomon had enough insight, when he was given an opportunity to ask what he wanted, to say, give me the ability to discern between good and evil as I deal with people. And then he had a third element in that prayer that may be the element that just seals all that we've said so far. Seals it together. He said, God, give thy servant an understanding heart. Now, if you're going to deal with people, you've got to have an understanding heart. How many times have we said or have heard said that you don't drive people, you lead them? You don't make people do something. You don't force people to do something. And even in an area where God approves authority, such as the father's authority over the children, he warned that that authority ought to be used in a tempered way, lest the child be discouraged, Colossians 3:21. Solomon evidently realized this point to some extent, and he realized, if I'm going to lead a group of people, and the number of people may have been 3 to 3.5 million, we don't know exactly how many, but into the millions at least. If I'm going to lead that many people, I've got to have an understanding heart to where I understand people. God, help me to think in terms of people, and help me to discern between good and evil, and help me to have an understanding heart. That's basically what Solomon's prayer was. That understanding heart may take the form sometimes of being able to listen. Listening to the problems of others, and listening to the needs of others, and listening to the concerns of others. That understanding heart sometimes may take the form of even shedding tears in sharing with that other person who has the problem, what that problem is, and being able to associate with that person not only in presence, but in dealing with the situation itself. An understanding heart. Oh, how we need that today in every relationship that we have. How much better our family circles would be if we had understanding hearts, to where we were willing to listen and be concerned and share with and care and bear. There are three words there that rhyme that are so important: share, care, and bear. And all of those are associated with this idea of an understanding heart. So it seems to me that we need to understand that Solomon did not ask for, nor was he given, wisdom in its entirety. In every area of life and in everything, that's not what he asked for, and that's not what God gave him. He said, God, I want wisdom in dealing with my people. Help me to be able to judge in the right way. Therefore, give me a knowledge between the difference between good and evil. And God, give me an understanding heart in judging the people. That seems to be the specific prayer that Solomon prayed. An understanding heart and the ability to know what's right in dealing with people. Boy, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could ask for that today and receive that? There's something else that's rather interesting, though. God says in verse 12, Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. Verse 12 says that God answered Solomon's specific prayer. But look at verse 13 and notice the little four-letter word also. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked. Now, did you get that? I have given thee that which thou hast not asked. In other words, Solomon, I'm going to give you more than you ask. And he mentions particularly two things. He said, I have given unto thee that which thou hast not asked, riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days, and so that the queen of Sheba could later say, the half has not yet been told. Solomon didn't ask for riches, but he got them. He did not ask for honor. God said, I'm going to give it to you. The point is that Solomon got some fringe benefits along with the specifics in his prayer, in answer to his prayer. He asked for this specific blessing. God said, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to answer it as you prayed. And now, Solomon, in addition to that, I'm going to give you riches and honor. You didn't ask for it, but I'll give it to you. There's a lesson there for us, perhaps two lessons. One is that God, because of his love for us as our Father, is always interested in even giving us more than we ask, and giving us that which he sees that we need, even when we do not ask. And the second lesson is that when we concentrate on those things that are important, and especially concentrate on serving people and dealing with people, we will receive the fringe benefits for which we maybe have not even asked. Now, I want you to contrast this for just a moment with the rich man in Luke 12, whose attitude was not external to the people, but internal to himself. He had the great harvest, and he said, what am I going to do? He said, I'm going to take care of it for myself. I've got all this rich, all these riches, all the honor that goes with that. I'm going to reach out and pull it all into myself. And if that man had prayed to God, his prayer might have been, God, I thank you for all these riches and honors and continue to give me more, and I'm going to take care of my own soul. God called that man a fool. But for the man Solomon, who did not ask for riches and honor, but rather asked for blessings that were involved in his dealing with people and reaching out to people, he received those fringe benefits. God gave him more than that for which he asked. And not only that, but in addition to the fringe benefits, God then gave some conditional blessings. Notice, he gave the specific blessing, he gave additional blessings, and then he gave conditional blessings. Read on in verse 14. Now in verse 13 he said, I've also given thee riches and honor. Verse 14, and if thou wilt walk in my ways, and keep my statutes and my commandments as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. Now he said, Solomon, I'm going to give you what you ask for. And I'm going to give you more than you ask for. And in addition to that, I'm going to give you even more blessings if you'll follow me and walk in my statutes. Over in the ninth chapter, where the Lord appeared to him as he had appeared in this first one, reference is made in verse 2 to that, the Lord spake unto him and said, I've heard thy prayer, and in verse 3, and then in verse 4 again, a conditional blessing at this time. And this is after the temple has been built, and evidently a continuing answer of the prayer. He said, and if thou wilt walk before me, as David thy father walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded thee, and will keep my statutes and my judgments, then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom upon Israel forever, as I have promised it to David. God said, I've given you the specific blessing, I've given you more blessings, and now, Solomon, I'm going to give you some blessings that are conditional. If you will walk in my statutes and my judgments, I'll give you length of days, and I'll give you a continuing kingdom. Solomon did not carry out all of those conditions. And though he is referred to on one occasion as a time when he grew older, his life was really not that old, comparatively speaking, because he did not carry out all the statutes and the commandments that God gave him. And certainly a continued study through the history of the children of Israel will show that the kingdom of Israel did not stand continually, but that it failed. To the extent that as it came near the last king, that it was said that there will never be a descendant of his that will sit on the throne in Israel, or judge in Israel in this sense. But God had said, Solomon, if you'll keep my statutes, then I'll even give you additional blessings. God blessed him in his specifics. He gave him more, and then he gave him some conditional blessings. But there's something else that's rather interesting as you look at the prayer and the answer to the prayer here in the ninth chapter. And remember, this is at a later date. This is after the temple has been built, and after another specific prayer of Solomon relative to the temple. The Lord appeared to Solomon the second time as he had appeared unto him in Gibeon, and the Lord said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and thy supplication that thou hast made before me. I have hallowed this house which thou hast built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. God said, Solomon, I've heard the prayer, and whatever is involved, let me tell you, here's something that's certain. I've hallowed this house, and I put my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart are with that house and with that people perpetually. Wasn't God saying to Solomon in connection with these conditional promises that, Solomon, no matter what happens, my house and my people will be hallowed, and my name will be respected, and my interest will continue? And I believe that's important for us today. You know, sometimes when we pray to God, our prayers may not be answered just exactly as we would like. And because of our imperfections and the consequences that are associated with those, we may not have the end result that we sometimes would like. But there is one thing of which we can be sure, that whatever the end result, that God's house and God's name and God's interest in his people will continue, and nothing can change that. We need to be reminded of that, as Solomon was, as we pray to God today and as we ask for his help in the different areas of life that we face. I think there are some great lessons to be learned from Solomon's prayer. And I admit to you frankly that I had not thought of some of these things until the last few days as I dealt with this request. Solomon prayed for something that was very, very important. He prayed for help in dealing with people. And I cannot underscore that enough. Because everything in which you and I are involved in the Lord's work is with people, amongst ourselves and reaching out. And Solomon said, I need to know the difference between good and evil. And God, he said, I need to have an understanding heart so that I can listen to and understand these people that I'm trying to lead. What a great prayer he prayed, and what a prayer you and I need to pray today. God, give us a knowledge of the difference between good and evil, and give us an understanding heart in dealing with people. And when we do that, I believe God will bless us as he did Solomon with these other things. Or we may not have all the riches that Solomon had, but we'll have riches that we need. We may not have the honor of being called king, but we'll have the honor of being called the children of a king. And there may be areas where there will be conditions. There are areas where there are conditions in becoming a Christian and living the Christian life where God puts some ifs on some of these things. But when all is said and done, we can rest assured that God's house, his people, God's name and his interest will be there, and nothing can change that. And so long as our prayers, like Solomon's, are in the area of asking God to help us to deal with people that we may be able to serve God, our prayers will be answered specifically, and you and I will receive fringe benefits, sometimes even beyond that which we're able to use and even understand. Yes, Solomon was a wise man, particularly in his dealing with people. That was his wish, that was his prayer, that's what was granted. You and I need to learn from that and have that same kind of desire today, because that's what Christianity is about. Serving people, and through that serving God, that we might be able to live with God and with his people when this life is over. Folks, there's nothing on this earth that brings with it the benefits of serving God as a part of his people and a part of his spiritual Israel today. You and I have that privilege and that opportunity of becoming Christians, and as Christians being able to offer up our prayers to God and know that he will answer them in leading us. If you've not been baptized into Christ, or if you need to be restored as one of his people, the Lord's invitation is yours. Won't you come as together we stand and sing?